The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon. Are you ready for Double Time with Double D? Go behind the scenes of the NFL and the game with Dave Duerson. We want to hear your words, too. Don't be afraid to speak up. Now, here's your host, Dave Duerson, Double D.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Double Time with Double D. I'm your host, Dave Duerson, and it is great to be with you to discuss what's going on in the world of the National Football League, and specifically, the NFL just completed the NFL Combine, which is a series of 4 or 5 days in Indianapolis, Indiana, where the college elite come together with all of the various NFL teams, coaches, owners, scouts, et cetera, media from all across the country to showcase their wares in terms of skill competition, running of the 40, agility, et cetera. And to help me with this conversation, I bring in the director of Voice America Sports, also a great safety, formerly with the Philadelphia Eagles and the Cleveland Browns, from the Ohio State University, and my frat brother, Ray Ellis. Q?
Man, that's much, that welcome is much appreciated, but I tell you what, I'm not sure if I'm worthy of it, but it said a little bit about me, but I tell you what's exciting, Dave, is just to see these young men have an opportunity to do something. I think it's a chance in a lifetime, but we get to sit back and be critics. You know, right. We get a chance to look at the process and speak our opinion about it, and there's some good things about it, and there's some flaws. And so we get a chance to talk about that. So I'm looking forward to having that discussion with you. And I also have spoken to another one of our members of the fraternity of football, Lionel Dalton, former defensive tackle with the Baltimore Ravens, who shares, like you, the experience of wearing one of those Super Bowl championship rings.
Right.
He will be joining us as well to give us some perspective from the big fella's side of point of view.
Well, I look forward to that, man, because in particular with what just happened with the NFL Combine, looks like the first two players taken in this year's NFL draft will, in fact, be the big men. We're talking defensive tackles. And so, what just happened over the last few days, I want to get into the discussion, Ray, so that our listeners can get and gain some perspective in regards to what the Combine is all about. Now, today's Combine, I say today, in 2010, it's everybody comes to one place, and it's there's one specific day when your position group, of course for us it would have been the defensive backs, would work out. But when you came out and was drafted into the NFL, when I came out in 1983, you know, I had to go to three different combines: one in Seattle, one in Detroit, and one in Tampa Bay. And, so you talk about exhaustion and being physically beat down, all of those things, along with the fact that when I was up in Seattle, I got seafood poisoning, so it wasn't a particularly great workout for me. But give us some perspective in regards to what you experienced back with your NFL Combine days.
Well, I came out 2 years before you did, Dave, so I came out in the 81 draft, and it was an exciting time, just to be invited to the Combine. And at that time, there was one Combine that we all went to in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot different. As a matter of fact, I don't even recall. We didn't run 40s and things of that nature. We did a few drills. I mean, we worked out a little bit, but I don't remember us running the 40s. I really don't remember that. I knew there were examinations, to see if you were healthy. I knew there was a few meetings with some coaches and sitting down and asking questions, but it was so long ago that it really was like a blur to me.
Right.
And I was really just looking forward you know, to the draft. But just the whole excitement around what some people think, you know, that you're going to be drafted, you know what team's going to draft you. What they really don't understand is the fact that, you know, the players are just as clueless as the people that are sitting in the audience many times at the draft as to when they're going to be drafted or who they're going to be drafted by.
Right. Well, there's no question about it. You hit it directly on the head. But, I'm surprised, though, that there was only one combine when you came out in 81, and then some 2 years later, there were three when I came out in 1983. And, you know, every place we went, you know, of course, when you talk about the examinations and everything, you know, I felt like I was basically a cattle, you know, because, you know, when they ran those various physical tests on us, checking our range of motion with your shoulder and your knees and your elbows and what have you, they literally took Sharpie, but, you know, magic marker. They took magic marker and would draw lines on your body and then write down the various degrees and everything. So you look like a beef chart by the end of the afternoon in regards to all of these marks on your body, you know, that were going to be there for a matter of days. And they were just moving you along like cattle, you know. And every place you went, somebody was taking a different measurement and writing on your body. And, of course, we did run 40s, and we ran a number of drills and what have you. But I just remember, then, of course, we took, I think it was called the Wonderlink IQ test. And, you know, so we had a little classroom stuff, and then, of course, we had some conversations with various coaches and what have you. But, you know, in regards to the overall experience, I left there feeling like less of a football player and more of a specimen.
Yeah, it was definitely a feeling of an experiment. You know, you almost felt as if this was an experiment, kind of the Tuskegee experiment, but not to that degree. So let me give the respect to all those folks out there.
Exactly.
That's a little sensitive thing. But you never knew what the information that they gathered, what they were doing with it. If you took a leak in a cup and they took it someplace, they sent it somewhere. Could they examine through that?
Yep.
You didn't really know. But when I think back about it now, we did run 40s because I recall that I didn't run my best 40 there, and I had and they didn't even call them pro days. But I guess you would say I had a pro day at Ohio State because at least one coach in particular came to Ohio State to have me work out for him. And part of the reason why was because, like what's happening today, there are some guys that are running times. And I don't want to say they're fabricated, but, you know, are they true times and a true example of what kind of speed this person has on the field? Because in my case, the coaches and many other coaches, not just with this particular coach, but many other coaches said, hey, this guy plays faster than he runs.
Yeah.
And I was never a track guy, so I didn't know anything about, you know, how to run. I just knew if that person had the ball, I had to get to him before he got to either the first down marker or a touchdown. And if I intercepted it, I knew that I had as fast as I could to get to the end zone. So that's what I knew about speed. The speed was you run as fast as you need to run to get accomplished what you need to get accomplished.
Well, so you played for Woody Hayes. So, you know, everything there was kill, maim, destroy. it was no different playing for Dan Devine, you know.
There you go.
The bottom
there
line was I was to hit everything moving in an opposite color jersey.
That's
and
exactly
if he,
right.
If he looked athletic, then I was supposed to put all the air out of his body, just that simple, and discourage him from wanting to come across the middle again. That was my job. I tried to do it to the very best of my ability. And I thank the good Lord that it did get me to those NFL combines and to a draft position. We've got about 3 minutes or so, Ray, before we take this first break. And, you know, we want to get into some of this discussion in regards to what these young men coming out of college this year can expect. But more importantly, you sent me some information yesterday. Of course, you know, I mean, I had access to this already. But every time I look at it, it just startles me that last year, in 2009, the 32 first-round draft picks of the NFL draft, just 32 guys, had a combined income of $834 million in salaries and guaranteed bonuses. 32 guys.
That's amazing.
$34 million.
That's amazing. That is amazing. I am. First of all, let me say I am happy for those young men.
Yes.
I understand that they didn't hit a grand slam. You know, somebody hit that for them, and they're going to be the recipients. And I understand that there's we're also talking about making some changes to that. But that just shows you how much of a business this is. That shows you why so many of these young men are spending time and money with people to help them perform at the best of their abilities in this job interview. And I believe Lionel might have joined us on the air too. And I'm not sure if he got a chance to go to the combine, so perhaps maybe he was or was not a part of that, of those who are there for the pickings, because you were drafted on draft day and you received all that money. Lionel, are you with us? I guess he's not, Dave. I thought he was there.
I'm here.
Oh, you're there? Okay.
If you would, Ray, go ahead and give a formal introduction to Lionel.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always like to give credit where credit is due. And there are many times I tell people, I say, listen, I'm in the company of somebody who has a ring on that looks a lot different than mine. I wear a wedding band every day, but that man over there has a Super Bowl championship ring on. So I don't think anything else needs to be said. A defensive tackle from the Baltimore Ravens, done outstanding with the Ravens. Also played with the Chiefs, played for my good friend, Herman Edwards, and for the man who drafted me, Dick Vermeil. But Lionel, welcome. Lionel Dalton, welcome to the show, man. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, Lionel. I tell you what, we're going to go ahead and pay some bills real quick. And as quickly as we come back, we're going to get into this discussion. But, man, I'm so glad that you joined us on the phone. We're going to talk about these Super Bowls. But more importantly, we want to get into depth in regards to what these young men coming out of college can expect, not only in regards to the draft process, but everything that they need now that they're looking at this serious money. $834 million for the first-round draft pick last year.
That's a lot of cash.
Looking somewhere upwards of $950 million to $1 billion for 32 guys split up in the 2010 draft. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
All right.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Are you ready to grow your business? Listen for the Independent Business Owner Show with your coach, Rick Corrado. This entertaining talk radio program will bring you the tools to help increase your business. You'll learn sales success, time management, lead generation, business development, life balance, and much more. Rick Corrado is here to help you take your business to the next level. Listen for the Independent Business Owner Show, heard live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Each week, take a visit inside the locker room of your favorite sport with Dez Clark, Paul Fresh Clark, and Lester Scudder Davis as they bring you sportsmanlike conduct. As a current player, Dez Clark can bring you inside the sports world like nobody can. His co-hosts represent the fans of the sports world. With both points of view on the table, it becomes an engaging and entertaining program, to say the least. Sportsmanlike Conduct can be heard Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
We all share similar desires to be loved, to be happy, and to feel well. Your inner journey is here to support you, inspire you, and expand your knowledge of you. Tune in for new insights. Meet our guests. Get the inspiration you need to create the life you really want. Your Inner Journey with Penny Calcina is about her inner journey and your inner journey and the things that connect us all. Tune in every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time for Your Inner Journey on Seventh Wave Network.
The opening kickoff is a beauty.
It's a fly ball deep right field. Back goes O'Neal. He's at the
shot.
Got it with 2.8 seconds left
to left. I don't care where they put him. Hicklin is out of here.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything.
Cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
Oh. You're tuned in to Double Time with Double D featuring host Dave Duerson. Get in on the action. Call us now at 1-888-346-9144. For Double D, that's 888-346-9144. Or drop an email to DoubleDFans@DDFavor.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Double Time with Double D. I'm your host, Dave Duerson, and joining me here for today's broadcast and education and edification for the football soul, of course, is Ray Ellis.
I wish I was making that Ray Lewis money, Dave.
Look, I got this all over me, Ray, because I got all these numbers in front of me, man, and I was just looking at Ray Lewis's numbers. That's what just threw me off. So, of course, joining me is Ray Ellis, and then likewise Lionel Dalton, who was a member of the Baltimore Ravens team that won the Super Bowl back in 2000. So as you can see, I'm talking to a Raven. I'm looking at Ray Lewis's numbers, Ray, so you got to forgive me that in that moment I had Ray on the brain. But it's so good to have you with us, man. And to our listening audience, we just want to educate you real quick as to what today's discussion is about. Primarily, we're talking about the NFL Combine and what the top 300 college players, actually I believe they invited some 250, but the top 300 players in the country are invited to Indianapolis, Indiana for a day or a couple of days of tests, be they running a 40-yard dash, a vertical jump, a broad jump, and lifting weights of 225 pounds in maximizing your number of reps. Along with a football IQ test and a number of interviews and what have you. But basically, it's your chance to showcase yourself and your talent to the body at large. And then for a number of players, they have what are called pro days, where they go off and do things individually at their respective colleges and universities. But in terms of the National Football League and the Players Association, the players are currently receiving 59.6% of football revenue in the form of salaries and benefits. So we'll just round that number to 60%. And in regards to what the NFL is facing this year in 2010, we're talking about an uncapped season. And that means a number of different things in this whole football world. But the bottom line is what it amounts to is that each team, for the most part, must spend on the minimum side $109 million per ball club. Some will be above that number, some will be below, but there are no penalties if, in fact, they go below that number. But that is, in fact, the targeted number, which will pretty much tell you where teams will be. Those that are actually vying to buy a championship team will be well north of that $109 million figure. Those who are holding their pockets for the potential lockout in 2011 will be well below that $109 million number. Back to our discussion in regards to this $834 million. Lionel, want to welcome you in. And you played your college ball at Eastern Michigan. Give us real quick your history in terms of the year you came out, your draft status, and your career.
Actually, I came out in 98. I didn't really have any draft status in the beginning. I was looking off, just to get in. A couple guys in the Hula Bowl that year got hurt. I ended up coming over to the Hula Bowl as an alternate. The guy in front of me got hurt. I ended up starting in the Hula Bowl.
Right.
Then I became a draft
Go ahead.
Yeah, then I became a prospect. After that, I went through the draft process. My agent was, filling my head, time to go third round, second round draft pick. I ended up being a free agent to the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
In 98. Got on the team, ended up making the active roster. I think they drafted a guy named Martin Chase before me in the third round. Ended up pretty much beating him out, ended up making the active roster, won a Super Bowl in 2000 with the Ravens, ended up playing 9 years in the NFL.
Man, that's awesome. I mean, Ray, to talk about a couple of guys getting injured and you get an opportunity to go to the Hula Bowl, you start in the Hula Bowl, you then go as a free agent to the Baltimore Ravens and play 9 years. But not only do you go there and play 9 years, but you won a world championship.
Yeah, and I got $500 sign bonus. I didn't get the 80 that they get now. I got $500 to sign.
Say that again. Please say that number again.
I got $500 to sign. After taxes, it was $520. It was $1,000. After taxes, it was $520.
Yeah, you were right up against, you were in that 49% tax bracket.
Right.
Now, Ray, when you came out, what kind of money did you get in regards to your signing bonus and your first year salary?
Oh, David, it was much different money when I came out. Again, my rookie year was 1981, and I don't know if I'm proud to say, but I'm happy to say that I got a little bit more than Lionel got. Not much more, but I got a little bit. My rookie year, I was a next to last player drafted, because you know as it works out, the two teams that go to the Super Bowl end up being, you know, the last two teams. So the Eagles obviously went to the Super Bowl, lost to the Raiders. So I was their last pick in the draft. And my signing bonus, when I signed with the Eagles, I believe it was something like $4,600, you know. Mm-hmm. And then if I made the team, so all in all, I probably got about, you know, $10,000 between signing and roster bonus.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I mean, I was excited about the mere fact that I made the team. But again, Dave, I mean, the numbers changed drastically at the end of my career as opposed to my rookie year.
Yes.
But I'm talking about, you know, first round draft picks. When we played ball, first round draft picks were slotted. They were making like $70,000. You know, that's what they were. That's exactly right. That was a salary for a first round draft pick, about $70,000. You know, and we're talking about monies today, where the first round draft picks combined of the 32 teams, I think it was last year, just the first round draft picks, between their contract, their signing bonuses, and their salaries, they got $834 million, as you said earlier, and that's just the first round picks.
Oh, yeah, just the first round picks. And check this. I was the 64th pick overall, which made me the fourth pick of the third round. And on draft day, Mike Ditka told me, he said, son, this will be the only time your education will hurt you. And clearly we're going to get into that discussion, because I want to discuss Myron Rowe from Florida State, who happens to be a Rhodes Scholar, and took this past college football season off to go work on a master's in medical anthropology over at Oxford University. But I was the 64th pick back in 1983. I had a $100,000 signing bonus, and I made $75,000 my first year. And, of course, we were in that 50% tax bracket. Last year's 64th, the 64th player pick, who was the last player picked in which would have been the second round, Richard Quinn, a tight end from North Carolina, got $3 million. $2.99 million. His signing bonus was $1.24
million. Wow.
And guaranteed.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's the difference with where the game has gone. But as you had shared earlier, you know, for these young men who are coming out now, and for the majority of these guys who, you know, have received all this big money in the past, not suggesting that they didn't deserve the money, because, you know, what the NFL brings in, the players get a cut of. But all that came about because of a lawsuit. Of course, we struck in 87, as you can remember, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Off four games. That was one quarter of our salary.
That's right.
And then we played for 6 years without a collective bargaining agreement, enduring all sorts of things with the owners taking away our medical benefits and putting them back, and, you know, charging us you know, maximums of $5,000 and $10,000, where that would be out of pocket to us before any insurances would kick in. You know, all sorts of things. Plan B, where they had structured amounts that we could actually be compensated. But in regards to the lawsuit, Reggie White versus the NFL, which got us free agency, there were five class action lawsuits, of which one actually was mine, Dave Duerson versus the Chicago Bears for preseason pay. And in the collective, we were successful in getting free agency for the players and for getting these guys the kind of numbers and revenue that they're currently receiving. Not that it was just five guys, because clearly it was across the board, all of the guys in the NFL who gave support, but some people had to step up and become a face, and I was one of those. Of course, it got me released from the Bears, and after we won the Super Bowl with the Giants, it got me released in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, I have no regrets, and I'm excited to be a part.
Well, Dave, I can tell you this, man. I'm going to be one of those guys to tell you that I'm going to thank you for what you did back then. Because again, whenever you become the face, you know, you're the person out front, and many times you become a casualty. And as you said, it happened to you twice, you know, because of that. But somebody has to do that, and I think that's a message that we want to get to a lot of the young guys that are playing ball today, just to understand, to know your history. And I want to ask you if you have some of that information, some of that documentation, which you can share to some of these young guys, to send it out, to let them know. Some young guys need to listen to conversations that we're having, because we're having conversations about compensation of players that are results of the three of us playing ball. And the numbers were drastically different for all three of us. And we all came up again. There was a first rounder above us and a second rounder above us that was drafted in our place and may or may not have performed better than we did. I mean, not on just our teams, but across the board. So those people actually got better compensation than we did. But we all, as players, did whatever we could to support each other, so that today these guys would stand up when they need to stand up, that they would make it better for a generation that's going. Because this $834 million that seems like such an astronomical number to us, it's going to be laughable in 10 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fact that it'll be even laughable this year. We're talking about moving up another $100 million, as much as maybe another $170 million to $1 billion.
But let me ask Lionel that question, because Lionel, you recently left the league, you know, certainly since Dave and I have. Mm-hmm. The salaries this year, because of it's an uncapped year, do you see the owners spending the money, or do you see them not spending the money to sign players, because really there's no penalties for them?
I see people like the Dallas Cowboys owner or the owner of the Washington Redskins trying to, you know, they're going to spend what they can. They want to win the Super Bowl. There's more money in that. It's more advertising dollars. Why not? You know, they're all businessmen first. So why wouldn't they spend the money? I think so. You know, maybe a team like the Buffalo Bills, they might not spend it. But those teams, those guys who's also billionaires outside of football, definitely going to spend the money.
Well, Lionel, in regards to the education that you and the guys in your era received in regards to, you know, the history of all the guys who played before you, you know, not just in terms of Ray and my era, but, you know, the era of Willie Lanier and Gale Sayers and, you know, Mike Ditka and Dick Butkus and those guys, and even before, all the way back to the Jim Ottos. Was there much education and much history, you know, which basically would spell out for you guys how this whole free agency thing came about, what kind of type of sacrifice it took to get there, and what it was going to take to maintain that type of momentum going forward?
Me personally, I always wanted to know that, so I would sit down and talk to a lot of the old coaches who would come into the locker room. But it's a lot of ignorance out there. A lot of guys don't know the history of the sport. They don't know anything about what you guys sacrificed to make the sport what it is today. And I'm learning a lot now as a retired player than I was when I was a player. Because when I was a player, all I would care about is what I'm doing on the field, how much money I'm making, and, you know, what girl I'm hooking up with the next day. You know, it's not even, you know, it's a lot of ignorance out there. Guys just don't know the history of the sport.
Well, I know that for a fact, because I run into these guys all the time, and it is interesting how the moment you leave the game, your interest level in terms of grabbing hold to that knowledge, it jumps tenfold, if not a hundredfold, and for a number of guys, quite frankly, it ends up being too late because of injuries and things of that sort.
Right.
Whereby by the time that they actually grab hold to the information and the knowledge they need, you know, their statutes of limitations are up. That's to even
worse. Yeah, and a lot of the guys, like I've had like 20 guys myself I've had sign up for the Brett Bell line of duty, for the California Workman's Comp. These guys just don't know this. And a lot of these guys that I told about these programs, they have no money. They broke. They calling me for a loan. And I tell them about these programs. I have, you know, so the NFL is not doing a good job of pushing this knowledge. And I would like to see more, well, somehow a lot of the older guys come back and share, you know, with the younger guys. Because a lot of us, like I said, we don't know the knowledge of the sport. We don't know what you guys went through. We don't know how to go through an uncapped season or, you know, any of the things that you guys went through to make the sport what it is today. And I think we will grow a better appreciation for the sport and for the guys who came before us if we knew this knowledge. It's just not available.
You know, for you, when you were playing and you'd have your player rep would have a union meeting, You know, would you show up at the meetings? Would there be a majority of the guys that would even show up at the meetings? Because, you know, me as a player rep, I became an alternate player rep my rookie year and was involved as a player rep all the way up until, you know, the end of my playing career with the Cardinals, ended up as a first vice president of the executive committee. But I would never have more than 50% of the guys show up. And of the guys who showed up, most were just sitting in there bad-mouthing Gene Upshaw and thinking that everybody was doing them a disservice,
right,
and never bothering to pay attention to the information being shared, nor ever bothering to read the collective bargaining agreement.
But I think it's due for that. A lot of guys just, you know, they've been pushed through the system. Like from high school, you're an athlete, you don't have – education is not important. And so, you know, when you tell me, you know, I've been in meetings all day and I got to do this, about the time I got to go to another meeting, a lot of the younger guys just don't care. And I think maybe after my fifth or sixth season, I sat down and kind of Lenny Moore kind of took me under his wing and kind of broke everything down to me, and I became more interested in what's going on. And I think it made me a better player and a better man. So, like I said, a lot of guys just don't want to know the information. They're undereducated. You know, we all not as smart as, you know, Dave. We didn't get to go to Notre Dame. But you know, we need to have some type of, I don't know, some. I would like to retire in the current player somehow to, you know, have a meeting, more meetings together and share and just find a way to, you know, I don't know, you know, bridge the gap between the younger and older players.
And it's interesting because I've always felt like this, Dave, and you know, since we've been speaking more, Dave and I, you know, bounce a lot of things off each other, Alino, and want to include you in these things too, because I always have this timeline where, you know, a player, when you come into the league, there are many times a couple people on the team that are 10-year veterans. So you come into the league, that means that there's a person who's been into the league for 10 years, and he has built relationships for 10 years. But when he came in the league, there was also a 10-year veteran of which he had 10 years of relationships. So that's 20 years of relationship. That's on the backside. Now, if you play 10 years or how many years, then you have those same type of relationships. So there's like a 40-year window span where one person in the middle can go 20 ahead and 20 back based upon the people that he met. So what I've always said this, and because it happened to me when I was a rookie, Harold Carmichael actually came up to me. You know, I'm 6'1", he's 6'8", a wide receiver, and I got to guard him. I'm like, wow, is this serious here? You know, but Harold, I was teasing him, and I said, one time we were talking about going someplace or doing something, and I just did the math, and I said, Harold, do you realize that when you were a rookie like I am today, I was in the 7th grade? And so what that means is there's some 7th graders out there right now that they might be playing football with some guys that are in the NFL right now. And people many times, they just don't look at it like that. And the point is that there are some kids that are looking up to some guys that are playing ball right now. And so when you get into the league or when you leave the league, what I'd like for players to do is to acknowledge, man, who was that person that you idolized when you were a kid? And let's get them in contact with them, and let's have conversation and dialogue with them. And then that person will be able to share all this information, because it's much easier for you to absorb that information if it's coming from somebody that, wow, you know, I tried to play ball like Jack Tatum. I want to hear everything Jack Tatum has to say.
Yeah.
And let Jack kind of be the one to filter all that information and share it with you.
Man, I know that was humbling when you told Harold that man was in 7th grade. But I'm sure that by the end of your career, Ray, the same thing happened to you, because as I was finishing my career in Phoenix, when Aeneas Williams came to the Cardinals, that's one of the first things he told me, was that he said, when I was in 7th grade, he said, I would play you on Tecmo Bowl. You were the fastest guy on the board.
And that
made the brother feel real old, real fast.
There you go. So Lionel, so think about it. When you were a kid, I mean, honestly,
It was a preseason game, and I didn't dress for this game. So, you know, it was halftime. So me and the guys left the field, was going in the stands to get hot dogs, whatever, eat food, whatever. And Walter Payton was commentating my game. And I was walking like, damn, that's Walter Payton. So I went over and walked to Payton. You know, he talked to us. He gave us autographs. You know, I'm a player now. I'm getting autographs. And I asked him, I said, I don't know if I'm going to make the team this year. What should I do? Like, what should be my focus? He said, the guy in front of you, whatever you do one more.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in front, everything he did. So if the guy would run 10 sprints, I would run 11.
Wow.
And you know, what? I ended up beating the guy out. And unfortunately, he died the month later. But I think it was a month or 2 months later. But that stuck with me my whole life, and that's what I tell the kids that I coach now, Lily. The guy in front of you, just do one. When everybody else sleeping, you working. That's how you become successful, and that stuck with me, and that was like something that really, you know, was a monumental moment in my life.
And that's awesome, too, because what Walter shared with you, man, is applicable to all aspects of life and business and everything else. That if you want to get ahead and to move on a person who either is in front of you or is a stumbling block, you know, who is setting up stumbling blocks in front of you, outwork them. And that's the bottom line. We want to shift here just a little bit, Ray, to the NFL Network and back to the Combine. And in particular, to your coach, Lionel, who actually made the comment, your former coach, Brian Billick. Talking about this young man, Myron Roll, from Florida State University. He's a safety who, you know, is a Rhodes Scholar. And he, as opposed to playing his senior year this past college football season, went over to Oxford and worked on his master's degree in medical anthropology. And
I saw something about that.
NFL. He's back. He was part of the Senior Bowl and part of the NFL Combine. And he says he wants to play a lengthy NFL career and then become either a physician or a neurosurgeon. So the guy's got a lot going on. But Brian Billick said that there was a character issue. And, Ray, that just blew me away.
issue, right.
He said that there was a, quote, character issue. But in this regard, he said it's not that we're concerned about him being a thug or carrying guns or what have you. He's too intelligent. He's too bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's interesting because this young man, and I'm sure it was not a mean-spirited comment. It's just that a comment can be thrown out and somebody can analyze it to death. And Dave and I like to do this kind of stuff. So, you know, because safety was a position that years ago when we came into the league, there weren't many of us that played safety. And I mean African-Americans that played safety. We became a generation of change.
Right.
We were bigger, stronger, and faster, you know. And then we could cover as well. And so now, and it was also supposedly a thinking man's position. And my assumption, and that's just an assumption, I've been told by people before, that they just didn't think that black guys could think.
Yeah, weren't many brothers playing safety back then?
Oh, yeah, it wasn't too many of us. Too many. And so now you have a young man where the character issue, and I believe what was said to him was a couple things. One in particular was somebody asked him how did he feel about deserting his team. You know, and this is a young man who has decided that football is a passion, but also that he's got a gift from God, and he's a very intelligent man, and he is going to take full advantage of all of the talents that he has. And so, and he can do that too, but they're more concerned about the fact is if they can count on him, if one day he is not going to decide, well, after playing 3 or 4 years, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go just, you know, pursue my career in medicine. I don't believe that you can ever, you know, draft a person and think about what they're going to be thinking about or what career change they're going to make 5 years down the road. This man has every right. If he performs to the ability where he deserves to be on the field today, I think he should be on the field today. You know, you talk about character. You've had other character issues before. This should be you should welcome this type of character. Whereas before, we were brought up in a generation where, again, they wanted people of character. Now the bad boy generation has surfaced, and now since the bad boy generation has surfaced, they get a person of character. They're not sure that's what they want anymore. I'm confused.
See, that's what's throwing me off because, you know, you got the Pac-Man Jones syndrome and, you know, Plaxico Burress and, you know, of course, you know, the situation with Michael Vick, although I question that. But irregardless, you know, the league set out and severely fined those guys because of, quote, character issues.
Exactly.
And so Myron Roll, and the reason I got excited, you know, and called you, Ray, and we talked about this even just yesterday in regards to Billy's comments, and Lionel, you know, I certainly want you to get in on this conversation. The reason I got excited was, see, back in 1983, like I said, I was a 64th player drafted, but I was projected to be the 10th player picked in the first round, supposed to go to the New York Giants, and instead they drafted Terry Kinnard out of Clemson, and then that first round went by, that second round went by. And, you know, and so I was that guy that, you know, every year there's a guy who's hanging around for a real long time. They keep coming back and interviewing him, you know, and of course it wasn't near the elaborate draft event that it is now. But I was in New York along with about 20 other guys, and they had us placed all over New York City and in New Jersey. And I was in Hackensack, New Jersey at Joe's Sports Bar and Grill with Leandra Riley from ESPN. And they kept coming to me, you know, about every five or six picks, and they said, well, Dave, you're still here. You're still here. And so when I finally got drafted, the very first thing Mike Ditka said to me was that, son, this will be the only time your education will hurt you. Mm. And so I'm looking at a guy like Myron Rowe, who was rated one of the top safeties in college football his junior year. So going into his senior year, would have certainly have been in that top five discussion. And they're talking about he may not go until the sixth or seventh round simply because the guy's got a future. So, you know, so it's going to cost him even more severely than it cost me. You know, I was talking about law school, but, I mean, obviously this young man is a Rhodes Scholar. But irregardless of his athletic ability, they're punishing him the same way that they punished Pac-Man Jones and Plaxico Burress in this case, because the guy's got a brain on his shoulder.
Well, I think it is. He has too many options. Think about it. We know training camp's tough, and a lot of days you want to just walk away. And you got a guy like Rowe who can come in, and he has options. So one day in training camp, he might just say, man, I'm tired of this. You know, I'm tired of getting my butt kicked. I got me a little money in the bank. I'm just going to leave. And as a businessman, that's a bad investment. You know, I'm not saying it's right, but if you think about it from a business standpoint, it's a bad investment. You don't know what this kid's going to do. He might come to training camp, might get a signing bonus. Right now, signing bonus is guaranteed. He can go and say he's hurt or whatever, keep his money, and go to medical school. So, you know, he's scary. You know, he's scary. He's a scary investment.
Lionel, that's interesting that you would say that, because, you know, we start off this conversation with the word character. And I believe that in this particular case with this young man, is his character is flawless. And part of the fact of which makes it so flawless is the fact that when it comes to football, he gave it everything he had. And then when he looked at that student side of him, his character was such that he would give it everything he had there. So to me, this would not be a person, and that to me, that would be a lack of character for somebody to come in to do that. And even for them to think that he would do that, it shows that they don't think he's a man of character. Now, after sitting with him and interviewing with him, I am sure that this man is the last person that you would have to worry about deciding that he's going to pack his bags because the workout or whatever, you know what I mean. We all that training camp stuff. I'm with you.
But
on
you
that.
Know that you know that man with the training camp thinking like, do I have any other options?
Yeah, but here's the thing about it is, but your first priority and your first dream is that you want to walk out on that field to be an
right.
NFL player.
So, absolutely. So, in fact, what he himself said, he said that he has reached the pinnacle. He said the Rhodes Scholarship was the pinnacle of academic achievement. And he said being a professional football player would be the pinnacle of football achievement. We want to get back to this discussion, fellas, right on the other side of the break, but we need to go away just for a moment, pay a few bills. So you guys hang with us, okay? We'll be right back.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
America Sports.
Are you ready to grow your business? Listen for the Independent Business Owner Show with your coach, Rick Corrado. This entertaining talk radio program will bring you the tools to help increase your business. You'll learn sales success, time management, lead generation, business development, life balance, and much more. Rick Corrado is here to help you take your business to the next level. Listen for the Independent Business Owner Show, heard live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Spin It with Chuck Foreman has a spin on so much that's going on, it will be hard to fit it all into the promo. We'll talk about the weekend games, what to look forward to, hot topics in the news. Spin It Old School, which gives a back-in-the-day approach from Chuck. A no-spin zone, where Chuck gives an unbiased opinion and lets you do the same. Chuck will be taking us around town and around the world with news, happenings, and more. It's football, news, and happenings. Tune in for Spin It with Chuck Foreman. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel.
The opening kickoff is a beauty.
It's a fly ball deep right field. Back goes O'Neill. He's at
tough
the
shot.
Got it with 2.8 seconds left
to left. I don't care where they put him. This one is out of here.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything.
Cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
You're tuned in to Double Time with Double D, featuring host Dave Duerson. Get in on the action. Call us now at 1-888-346-9144. For Double D, that's 888-346-9144. Or drop an email to DoubleDFans@ddfavor.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Double Time with Double D. I'm your host, Dave Duerson, and I've got two great gentlemen on the radio with me today in our discussion, Ray Ellis and Lionel Dalton. We're just going to get right back into this flow because we've only got some 10 minutes, and we never, ever have enough time. And today we're talking about the NFL Combine and what the rookies, this year's college seniors, well, juniors and seniors, will be faced with as they prepare for draft day and the points beyond. And Lionel, for yourself, and in regards to, you know, the course of your career, because again, you know, when we begin to talk about the economics and the numbers, you know, your numbers, of course, you know, blow mine and Ray's out the water. And so for these young men coming out in this year's draft, which will be next month, in terms of what type of team these individuals need to have around them, I mean, it's more than just an agent these days. Am I correct?
Yeah, it's a lot of distractions. You know, you need to have somebody you trust. Stay grounded and just stay around the people who love you, the people who were there when you weren't making money. You know, because there's a lot of new friends, a lot of people with different business opportunities. Just stick close to the people you love, and you'll be fine.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know, financial advisors, an estate lawyer. I mean, you know, there's a plethora of people that. You know, with the type of economics that the guys are coming in with, you know, they need financial advising and all sorts of things. But to your point, there's that trust factor. And, and I think that above all is the one thing that's missing both at the NFL level in its entirety and certainly at the collegiate level. And I think that that's something that the NFL needs to take full responsibility for to work with, Ray, at the collegiate level. That there be some significant training. Maybe it's a class that guys have to take who are
right.
College athletics. I don't care whether it's.
And you know what? It also is a lot of, like, socially. A lot of guys come from social areas when parents don't have a lot of money.
Exactly.
And so, guys, they don't, you know, you got a young guy coming with all his money. He has no idea what to do with it. I had a teammate who mother had some issues, and this guy would keep 500 cash in his house. You know, he didn't trust banks, or he would, give his mother thousands of dollars at a time, and she was blowing it on whatever. And he ended up being broken in his career because he's trying to take care of everybody because she didn't know anything about finance. She wasn't financially literate. So I don't know how do you by that? You know, how do you, you know, if his parents have no idea about it, how do you sit a guy down and make him learn this? Because it's definitely important right now, because you have a lot of money, you're not used to it. You know, anybody can run through a lot. I have teammates that have $15 million signed on, is broke now, because he just wasn't financially literate and didn't do the right things with his money.
Well, I think what happens is it needs to start early intervention. You know, it needs to be a part of sports. You know, that's why I tell people about athletes, you know, this person here is a very diverse and very complicated makeup of a student athlete, and there's two lives that run parallel. They're always in the education system, and they also have this athletic side of them that's going on. And then all of a sudden, when they're done playing college ball, they just deal with the athletic side, and then the learning tends to stop. And I think we need to somehow make sure that that's a continuing education. And particularly, we talk about, you know, financial literacy. That is extremely important. And character and all those things are extremely important. So there need to be more programs that are developed that would, you know, fit that niche that's missing in the athlete's life. And with, particularly with today's economics and the amount of money that these athletes are receiving, the horror stories. And I want to ask the Players Association to step up to address those issues, because those horror stories just should not exist. I think that the minimum salary of a player in his first year is more than $250,000 just his first year.
Oh, absolutely. You know? It's not only that, but the very first pick of last year's draft, Matthew Stafford, got $72 million.
And that's it.
$48.7 million of that was guaranteed.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is that, you know, those individuals coming out today, you know, just for instance, with these first seven guys, the lowest guaranteed money there was $26 million guaranteed.
That's a lot of money.
Hey, we've got a caller on hold that we want to bring in. He, in fact, is a CBS sports analyst and sports anchor, and he's a good friend of mine, and he's a Hoosier. But we actually teamed up and did some things out in Phoenix, and now he hails out of the great city of Atlanta, and that would be Gil Tyree. Gil, glad to have you with us, man.
Hey, how you doing, Double D? It's good to see you. I want to applaud you and Ray and also Lionel for the great show. I mean, the historical perspective is off the chain, and I think you guys could be commended, because the idiots we see now in sports talk radio do not delve into that. A couple questions I want to ask you, because I know you're pressed for time. Do you believe that the owners will lock out the players, and your thoughts about where we're going in terms of athletes and appearing on shows like Dancing with the Stars and self-promotion that we saw down in the Super Bowl with Ocho Cinco Network? And also, I'd like to ask, do you perceive that Brian Billick's comments on the NFL Network relative to Mr. Roll were perceived as racist in terms of his intelligence and how he would appear in terms of dealing with him as a player if he should play in the National Football League? I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Okay. Hey, thank you for calling, Gil. We appreciate it. Ray,
okay. great show.
In terms of the lockout, do you think that there's going to be one?
Well, here's the thing about it. You know, I've been around football for so long. I was born and raised in Canton, Ohio, Dave, and I've just seen so many things happen. But this is the first time in my life where I feel very confident that because of today's economics, that I don't think that this game could withstand a work stoppage where there's a fight between billionaires and millionaires and people losing their homes and their jobs and things of that nature. I just think that they're smart enough to avoid that from happening. So I don't believe there will be a work stoppage. I really do not believe.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with you on this one. The NFL generated some $8 billion in revenue for the 2009 season. But interestingly enough, in the year 2011, all four of the major pro sports teams' collective bargaining agreements are up. And all those other guys are watching what happens here in the NFL. But the NFL is now America's favorite pastime. It's as far surpassed what baseball is doing, and it cannot afford a lockout and a work stoppage. But as we talked about yesterday, Ray, without question, there's going to be training camp. There's going to be mini camp, because if there's not, then without question, there would be no season in 2011. We've only got about another minute before we've got to go.
Well, Gil asked, Dave, if I could.
Gil's last question, where are we going with athletes? I think it's just all pure economics and marketability. And guys are trying to maximize what they can do off the field, irregardless of what they're making on the field. Guys are looking for an opportunity. And that's something that we're going to talk about, in fact, next week. And, Ray, I'm going to drag you in for another discussion because, you know, as we talk about off the air all the time, the owners have and the union have got to get together and find a way where as guys retire that there are additional opportunities, be they business opportunities for facilities management, cleaning, whatever. If guys have companies, they need to be taken advantage of and being given some of those opportunities. Hey,
that's right.
Lionel, you get the last word, and thank you so much for joining us, man. It's really a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, I appreciate you guys bringing me on. I would just like to see the guys network more. You know, a lot of guys who lead a game, and once the guys are in the game, they don't reach out to the guys who retired, and we don't network, and we don't do business together. I would like to see some form of networking group or something. The guys networking and doing more business together. I would love to see that. I think it would be successful. It would help with the growth of the players after the game.
Absolutely. Hey, I tell you what, I look forward to having you on the show again sometime. Hopefully you'll accept my invitation when I reach out to you.
Anytime, bro.
All right, man. Hey, it's so good to have you on. Thank you, Lionel. Thank you, Ray. And thank you to our programming manager, Dion, back in the studios in Arizona. And to our listening audience, again, we thank you because without you, there'd be no Double D. There would certainly be no Double Time with Double D. And so we'll be talking to you again next week. Same time, same channel, 3 p.m. on Thursday. Until then, take care. God bless you.
Thanks again for joining Dave Duerson for Double Time with Double D. We'll be back again next Thursday at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern for another look inside the game, words of inspiration, and more on the Voice America Sports Channel. Game's on again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.